Yes, you can make money on TikTok as a business owner, as a coach, as a consultant, as a service provider. And today I have Megan Griffith on the show to share her experience getting leads and making money on TikTok. Let's get into it. You're listening to the Mindful Marketing Podcast. I'm Andrea Jones. Before we get into it, this episode is sponsored by Riverside, which is the all-in-one podcasting tool we now use for our show. And y'all, they feel super luxurious. Riverside is the all-in-one podcasting and video recording tool that gives you studio quality recordings and lightning fast editing right inside your browser. And y'all, it's super intuitive and easy to use. Once your recording is done, you'll be able to automatically download separate audio and video tracks and edit it. All within a few clicks. It's really very easy. So head over to Riverside and you'll get 15% off. That's 15% off using my code DREA, D-R-E-A, at checkout. But y'all, it's free to get started. So click the link in the show notes and get started today. Megan, I'm so excited to pick your brain today. Welcome to the show.
Yay. Thank you for having me. So excited to be here.
Yes. We were talking in the green room before the show about some of your experience and especially your background working with neurodivergent business owners. So for those people who are listening, neurodivergent, it could be a new term for them. Could you define it for us?
Absolutely. I actually don't have to. A really amazing biracial activist named Kassiana Asasmasu defined it for us. She is the one who coined the term, I believe. And she describes it as anyone whose neurology differs from what is considered typical. So it's pretty broad, but she meant it to be broad. It's meant to be as inclusive as possible.
Yeah. And I think that's really important distinction to make, because sometimes definitions skew negative when I hear people talk about it. And I'm like, this isn't a bad thing. It's just different, right? Like, we all have different like capabilities in life. But when I, thankfully, like in the past couple of years, social media has been a great educational resource, especially for someone like me who doesn't consider themselves neurodivergent. And so I'm on this side of TikTok where I get tons of neurospicy content, because honestly, y'all have like hacked life to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm using this tip for myself, even though I don't consider myself neurodivergent. I'm like, this is just helpful information, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. I think there's a really interesting conversation in the neurodivergent community about like how capitalism affects neurodivergence and like the idea that neurotypicality is at least partially defined by how well you function under capitalism. And so the truth is none of us function optimally under capitalism, at least in my opinion, I suppose. And so these hacks, I think, help everyone, you know, because we're all living under the same system.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And it's like, are we designed to are we like supposed to like wake up at 9 and work until 5 and like not take any breaks and just, you know, sit in one spot and like do the same thing? I don't think so, right? And so some of these tools that I'm picking up from my neurospicy friends have been really, really helpful. So talk to us a little bit about how you support your community in the work that you do.
Oh, okay. So I have sort of like a tiered approach to how I support my people. The first tier is just like information, informing people, educating people, validating people. That's a huge part of my work, is just being like, you're not crazy. You're not crazy. You're not crazy. because I needed to hear that for so long and no one was telling me that. So that's sort of the first tier. Then we move on to like them choosing to work with me in a free context. So I have a lot of freebies for people to take advantage of. I want mental health information and neurodivergent information to be as accessible as possible. And then I also have a paid tier because this is my job. And, you know, I also deserve to be paid and compensated for my time as a disabled creator, you know? So, yeah.
How did you even get started in this world? Like, what were you doing right before you launched your business?
Ooh, I love this question. So, I had a blog for like 2 years that I was just writing for fun. And then I had a baby and then a pandemic happened and I was still writing the blog and caring for the baby and trapped in my house. And I think I just reached a point where I was like, if I'm going to keep spending my time on this, it needs to make me some money. And so I joined like a business coaching community and started learning what an opt-in is. I set up an email list. I created my first course within like 2 weeks of starting my business because I was like, it needs to make money now. Yeah. I got started with mental health in general. And I got started on TikTok about 2 months after I started my business at my husband's urging. He was like, Megan, your people are on TikTok. Like you have to do it. And I was like, I don't want to, it's scary. And he kind of made me, and I went viral within the first like month. And I had about 50 discovery calls in a matter of like 3 days. And it was very wild. And that was how I became a coach. The video that went viral was the first video where I introduced myself as a mental health coach. And everybody was like, I want to work with you, which was great and very, very humbling and flattering. So that's, it just launched me into coaching. I got started. It was very rocky at first. I was new and I let people know I was new. And, you know, some people decided to work with me and I, you know, honed my skills and I narrowed down and from mental health in general to neurodivergence. And that's what I do now. I'm a coach, course creator, and content creator.
Oh my gosh. I love that this all started on TikTok too. Do you remember like what that first video was about?
Oh, for sure. It was about internalized shame and signs that you are dealing with some, you know, pretty nasty feelings about yourself.
Yeah. And so I see like topics like these is what really resonates with people because you've embodied the challenges, the everyday thoughts that we have as just humans existing in this world. And you shared it in such a way and in a vertical where people were paying attention to it. They're like, oh, I'm not the only person who has, you know, who thinks these things, who deals with this level of shame. And it kind of exposes like the very human nature, the very qualities of human nature that we all go through. And so this is where, like, to me, this is where the power of social media is, right? It's not about, you didn't go into that video going, I have to get 50 discovery calls, right? Like going in with that energy would not have produced the same result. Instead, you went in with, I want to share this information that I know, and I want to just help people around me, right? And it worked beautifully for you.
Yes. 100%.
So after that first video went viral, this is like what, early 2020, early pandemic?
Early 2021. Yeah.
2021. Okay. So we're past the like worst part of the pandemic lockdowns. And people are starting to like explore the world around them. And you have these 50 discovery calls. Now, discovery calls don't necessarily mean like dollars and cents in the bank, though. So what happened next after that?
Well, I went to my in-laws so that they could watch my baby so that I could take 50 calls because I had my calendar set up to accept calls like anytime from like 8 to 5 because I didn't expect to get that many. And so I had calls from 8 in the morning to 5 p.m. like for like 3 or 4 days straight. So I was like, I called my in-laws. I was like, can you come? Can you watch my baby? So they were very gracious. They were great. They did not understand what was going on. They're like, what do you mean? You posted a video on TikTok and now people want to talk to you on Zoom. Like they were very confused, but very gracious. So I went down there, I took all the calls and I came up with a very loose script of like, this is what I want to make sure they know, like I'm not a therapist. This is not therapy, that type of thing. This is how I can help. All of that, outlining that. And then I came up with a list of questions that I wanted to ask them. One of my favorites is the miracle question. You know, if one thing could miraculously be different about your life, what would it be? Mm-hmm. And like, how can I help you work with that? So that's one of my favorite coaching questions for getting to know people. So I asked them that. And then from there, I think I had, I think I had like 50 discovery calls booked. I think about 30 of them showed up. A lot of people, because this is back when my discovery calls were free. They're now $15, which is really just like a little barrier to get people to actually show up. It's not meant to exclude people, I promise. But because in that initial like influx of calls, so many people didn't come. So I was like, I need to charge a little something. So about 30 people showed up. And from there, I think I got 3 or 4, maybe 5 clients from that, like that I kept consistently for a couple of months.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So the initial call wasn't just for converting them into one-on-one, like one session. It was like a monthly ongoing commitment for them.
Originally, because I was new to coaching, I didn't know how to set up like a 3-month container. Like I didn't have the experience. So what we did was it was just a month, like a week by week basis. So they would come talk with me. And then at the end of the call, we would schedule together for next week. So we just kind of did it that way at first. But yes, now I do packages because it is much more like sustainable and consistent and like safe for both of us. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is one of the things that often comes up in those moments too, where like you have your big moment, you have all this traction, you get the initial burst of like interest, but then how do you turn that into something sustainable? Because now you do have this sustainable income model, you have sustainable business. So between that first video and now, what are some of the things you're doing on TikTok to make sure that those leads keep coming in and that you still have that consistent like revenue coming in?
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yes. So I think the big thing that I have learned to do is to repeat myself. And a lot of content creators really avoid this. They kind of hate this. And I get it. I understand the impulse to like constantly be making new content. But something that I find very comforting is people don't care about you as much as you care about you. And so like very few people are watching every video you put out. Like you're going to have those hardcore fans and those are our favorite people. We love them very much. But those people are not going to mind if you make a couple repeat videos because they love you, you know? So you really don't have to worry about it. So that's a big thing I've learned. Like I made that internalized shame video probably 3 or 4 different times over the course of a couple of months before I switched from mental health in general to neurodivergence. And every time I made it, it didn't go as viral as the first time every time, but it would pop off for sure. And I would get a bunch of new followers, a bunch of new discovery calls. And so I just learned that that was something people resonated with. And now the videos that I make over and over are, you know, 5 signs you're dealing with executive dysfunction, 5 signs you might be autistic and ADHD like me. And those pop off every time because people are just so desperate for the information. They're so desperate for the lived experience information. And yeah, so that is a big thing that I've done is just finding the things that work and repeating them. Another thing is I do like mini ads for my freebies or my low cost offers. So TikTok really hates when you try to get people off the platform. So you have to be very careful about how you do this. You can't go in with like, here's my freebie, go off the app, you know, because TikTok will shut that down. But what you can do, a big thing that I've done, so I have these diagnosis binders. They're obviously not official diagnoses, but they can help you with your self-diagnosis or help you bring your information to an assessor to get professionally diagnosed. And what I do is I made it for myself first, and then I just made a video about it and people were like, I will pay you for this. So I made it into a digital product. But basically I just pick up a binder, pick up my camera and I flip through the pages. I'm like, this is what this is. This is how much it costs, you know, go check it out. And for a while there, I would make one of those videos every 2 weeks and I would make $1,000 within 48 hours every time. It was crazy. It slowed a little since then, but yeah.
Yeah. How much are the binders?
$25.
Okay. Wow. Okay. I want to dive more into this. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to get a little nosy. We'll take a break. Want to know the easiest way to keep up with all of the social media trends? Well, I got y'all back, boo. All you have to do is access my product, Trend Savvy, where you will get a weekly email trend report. That covers all of the latest and greatest social media trends and updates. I'm talking TikTok sounds and Instagram sounds. I'm talking pop culture references. I'm talking memes and CapCut video trends. There's a lot in our trend reports, and you can get it all for one price. It's not a monthly subscription, just one price. Check it out by going to onlinedre.com/trendsavvy and get started today. All right, and we're back. So I want to come back to the ads in a sec, but I'm curious about the videos you make outside of the ads. They seem to be very information focused. Do you have like a call to action, or what is the encouragement for someone to then go book a discovery call with you? Is it just like leaning into natural curiosity, or do you actually say in the videos, you know, hey, go, if you need this more support, go book a discovery call. Like, talk to us about what that call to action looks like.
Yeah. So I have different call to actions. I like to have a little variety. That way people don't feel like I'm constantly pushing them to do one thing, because a lot of people in my audience they experience something called pathological demand avoidance. It's a particular profile of autism. And basically, demands feel like threats. So when you're saying like, oh, go book a discovery call, there's a lot of people in my audience who are going to be like, why are you trying to make me do stuff? So I try to like be very accommodating of that. And just people in general don't always love being told the same thing over and over. So I have a variety of calls to action, some of which are subtle, some of which are very like direct. So sometimes if I'm doing a series, like I did a series on neurodivergent vocabulary lessons, like here are our words, here are what they mean. If I'm doing a series, I'm like, hey, follow if you want to check out more words, if you want to learn more stuff. So that increases followers, which increases views on videos that do convert to discovery calls. So it's kind of a long game, that call to action. Sometimes I ask people to stitch the video, which is really, really useful for getting your video out there more. I think this is a super underutilized call to action. And it helps you build not an audience, but a community, which I think makes a huge difference on TikTok. Like my people feel very connected to me a lot of the time. Whereas I think the big difference between like a community and an audience, like Taylor Swift has an audience. You know, people know they're never getting anywhere close to getting to know the real her, you know, like that's not the vibe, and that's fine. Versus like a community is much more like your local church, you know your pastor, your deacon, whatever, like, you know, the youth minister, and you feel very connected to them. So I aim to create a community more than an audience. I think my TikTok following is almost up to 300,000 at this point. So I think we're veering to the edge of like, it's kind of got to be an audience at some point. Like community can only expand so far. But anyway, I think stitching is a really good call to action for making your people feel involved and feel connected to you. So that's another really good call to action. And then finally, a big one that I ask people to do pretty frequently is comment. And I do not say like, oh, comment if you relate, or comment if, you know, it's so vague, people aren't going to do it. People need specific directions a lot of the time if they're going to take an action, specifically on social media, because I mean, think about yourself when you're on social media, you're scrolling, you're having fun, you're not thinking of like, you're not using a lot of those cognitive functions, you're kind of sitting back. But if someone asks you to comment, they're asking you to shift forward into that frontal lobe. If you're going to do that, you want to make it easy. So like my calls to action are much more like, let's say I make a video of like 10 signs someone should have noticed I was autistic sooner. I will often tell people like, oh my gosh, comment your most obvious trait that everyone missed. And people do. And we get to relate over it. And it's really fun.
Yes. And I like the specificity with the connection to your community. It's not about getting them to comment for the sake of commenting to like boost the algorithm. It's commenting for connection, right? It's like, hey, I know some of these stood out to you, or I want to hear other ones that maybe I didn't list. Like let's share and exchange ideas. And I think this is another one of those beautiful things about social media. It's not a broadcast, right? It's not an audience. It's not Taylor Swift up there doing the Eras tour. It is, you know, one person happening to connect with multiple people at the same time, but in a very communal space. And there's a give and a take to it. I am curious, though, about these ads, you call them, on TikTok, because I do find the same thing with myself, with my clients. Anytime you start to like really emphasize leaving the platform, not just TikTok, almost any social media platform's like, we don't like that. We need to keep people on here because our job is to sell ad space for our stuff. So what is the thought process behind creating an ad that still doesn't get you shadow banned or doesn't get TikTok to go, oh, let's not show this video to anybody?
Okay. So the first thing on like a very practical note is I really avoid saying the words link in bio. TikTok has metadata. It listens to the words you're saying and it knows what link in bio means. It knows that means off platform. So it tends to shut down any video that uses those words. But at the same time, people do, like, I've had people, if I say like, oh, go download this, people will be like, where do I get it? And I'm like, you're on TikTok, you know where to get it. Like, but some people don't. Some people need that instruction and that's fine. So I have taken to saying schmink in schmio and that does seem to work. I know other people will put like the link emoji sticker on their screen and be like, hey, go here. stuff like that. So there's like sneaky ways around making sure the call to action is direct and like telling people exactly what to do without using those words. So on a practical level, that's something I do. But when it comes to the structure of the video, when I'm like advertising for a freebie or advertising for like a low cost product, sometimes I even just straight up make ads for my coaching. What I usually do is I provide value first. So I have like a very specific setup where I hook people with like kind of a clickbaity title that I don't consider clickbait because the definition of clickbait is a title that the article doesn't fulfill on. Mm. I fulfill. I bring the value. So it's okay for me to use a clickbaity title because I'm going to give you what I say I'm giving you. So kind of clickbaity, but then you fulfill. And then after that, I usually just say like, hey, my name is Megan. I'm a neurodivergent life coach. And if you're looking for more help with emotional dysregulation, I have the Mental Breakdown Survival Guide, you know, something like that. So basically hook, value, pitch. That is sort of the way my ads go.
Yes. And I love that you call them ads and that you have a cadence where, you know, every 2 weeks or so you're putting these out there because y'all, this is a business at the end of the day. Like, yes, you have your tiers of like free content and low cost resources. And so you are providing tons of value for your community and you still are making offers, right? You're still saying, hey, and this, if you want more support, here's how to get it. Beautiful. Love it. So one of the things as well that comes up oftentimes when someone has success like you have on a social media platform is boundaries. So how do you kind of protect yourself when you're basically opening yourself up for, you know, the trolls of the internet to critique or for your lovely community members to start expecting things from you? How do you maintain your personal boundaries?
Okay, so full disclosure, my emotional boundaries around TikTok are pretty good now, but my time boundaries around TikTok are pretty bad still. So just so we're aware, it's still something I'm working on, like especially with newborns. So for people listening, I had twins about a month and a half ago. And so they wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning for their overnight feed. And I will feed them. And then I end up on TikTok for like 3 hours in the middle of the night. And I'm like, what? I'm like, what am I doing? But it's hard. So, cause I scroll TikTok while I feed them and then I get hooked. And anyway, so time boundaries are a mess. Emotional boundaries as a creator on TikTok though. Those used to be really hard for me. Trolls really got to me. They just tore me apart. I'm a very, very sensitive person. I always have been. I think that I see people's intentions even when they don't realize what their intentions are, if that makes sense. Like sometimes people think they're just being honest, but really their honesty comes from a place of like bigotry or just rudeness, frankly. So anyway, and my sensitivity picks up on all of that and just absorbs it like a sponge. But something I actually heard a different creator, Catherine Manning over on YouTube, she was talking about, therapy and what she had learned. And she talked about how we are all sponges. We're all meant to absorb. That's the nature of community. We absorb from each other. But there are some people around whom you have to wear a little rain jacket. And that is what I've really gotten good at doing on TikTok, is I just have my little rain jacket. And like, I don't know, people are allowed to be mad at me. People are allowed to not like me. And I think that used to really stress me out. I thought that my job in life was to make everyone else comfortable. And I have since learned that that is not my job. And that other people are in charge of their own comfort. So if I say something that other people get up in arms about, I do my best to listen to people who are making in good faith arguments, to make sure I'm not creating an echo chamber and ignoring any opposition. But people, like, I have things that I'm very upfront about on my account. For example, like, self-diagnosis is valid, Black Lives Matter. Like, there are things that I am not willing to equivocate on under any certain terms. So people who post things against that just get blocked. I used to try to have conversations with people, and then I started getting community guidelines violations because people would report me for bullying. And I'm like, my friend, I'm not bullying. You're just wrong. So I just started blocking people. I think make good friends with the block button. You do not owe anyone your platform. It's social media. You don't owe them anything, frankly. Like, the block button is not something you should be afraid of, in my opinion. I think that has helped a lot. And then the other thing that helps with trolls is you have to make sure you're not accidentally talking to them and encouraging them in. Because if you are so worried about trolls that you are subconsciously making videos speaking to them to try to convince them not to hate you, they're going to hate you no matter what. It doesn't make sense. Trolls don't make sense. Don't accidentally talk to them. Don't accidentally focus on them. Talk to your ideal person. Who needs you the most right now? And speak to them.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Friends with the block button. Do not talk to the trolls. And I think it's tough because, especially in the first moments where, you know, videos start gaining traction or social media posts start gaining traction, you see all these new community members come in. We do want to value everyone, right? But there are some people who are not there with good intentions, and they will detract from the experience of everyone else who is there with good intentions. And so you kind of have to be a little bit self-discerning about it. And sometimes you have to come across the, you know, shitty troll person before you even start to recognize the pattern and go, oh, these kinds of people aren't actually part of my community. They're just here to stir the pot, right? I love that. And I'm curious too, if anything changed after having your twins. So now you have three kids. So your life is like grown even more. Has any of your habits changed after, like, as far as content creation or boundaries go?
Not really. Honestly, it's changed compared to my pregnancy. I was so exhausted for like 9 months straight that I really wasn't creating nearly as much content as I was used to. Whereas like within maybe 5 days after having my twins, I was back at creating content because I was like, oh my gosh, I've missed this. This is so nice. I have energy to talk about the things I love. So yeah, I make about 3 TikToks a day, pretty much every day, including weekends. I will take a day off here and there, but it only takes me about an hour now. I've really got it down to a science. So yeah, my habits around creation are the same. My habits around watching TikTok have, like I said, I get sucked in now during the nighttime feeds. but that's, it hasn't changed too much.
Wow. 3 videos a day. That feels like a lot to me. As someone who probably does 3 a week on a good week. how did you commit to being that consistent?
Honestly, it all goes back to that first viral video, because I was creating for about a month and I was doing 3 videos a day because I had heard that that was, you know, a pretty good amount. I knew some creators who were growing faster were doing more. But I figured 3 was about as much as I could possibly push myself to. So I started with 3, and then I went viral, and it was like, oh, this is working. So I just kept doing it, you know? And I think that's part of where my autistic brain comes in, where it's just, I really love routine. And I have this whole routine now where my son wakes me up and I take him to daycare. I come home, I feed the babies, I have my morning coffee, I make my TikToks. Done. Like, that's my morning and I love it.
Yes. The routine I think is key too, because that's a huge component of your business model. You know, you mentioned the tiers, and a huge component is the information sharing, right? And so TikTok is your way of doing that. I also notice you're on Instagram as well as YouTube. You have your podcast. So where does that play into the content creation piece?
So everything sort of serves a different purpose. So TikTok is really good for community building and getting leads. So I have a lot of people on my email list now. I want to say it's like 16,000 people, and it's from TikTok, really. So that it's all about getting leads. It's about getting people further into my ecosystem and providing them with free content if they can't afford to work with me further, you know? So that's where TikTok serves its purpose. Instagram is sort of about getting leads. I get some leads from Instagram, but it's definitely more about the second level, which is like nurturing. It's where I want people to feel like they know me. Like, I post on my stories all the time, mostly because I am just an oversharing bitch. Like, I can't help it. but people, they start to feel like they know me, which I think is really helpful, because you're way more likely to work with a coach who you trust, you know? Like, a therapist, you might be willing to take a stab in the dark because, you know, they're a professional or whatever. Not that I'm not professional, but like, they have the degree behind their name. A coach, anyone can call themselves a coach, and that makes people really scared. Understandably. So if people come to Instagram and they get to know me and they're like, oh no, she knows her shit. So that I think is really helpful. YouTube is another lead generator for me. Now, I haven't posted on there in about a year, but that's about to change. That's another big lead generator and somewhat nurture. If I have time, I respond to comments, but man, the YouTube comment section is just vitriolic. It's truly not great. It is the worst comment section by far.
Agreed.
In my opinion. So there's that. And then the podcast is a big nurture one. It's just for people. It's for us to have like a conversation and a chit chat together. So. Yeah.
Yay. I love that. And I love that you have the different tiers as well, because TikTok truly is about discovery because of the way the algorithms work. Like, new people are finding you consistently. They're joining your list. They're following you on Instagram, and it works beautifully to kind of continue to nurture those folks. And then same thing with YouTube. It's a giant search engine. So if someone's searching for the specific topics you talk about, you have your catalog there. Even though you haven't released a video in a year, you still have a catalog that they can go and watch at any time. So I love that they serve different purposes for you as well. So what's next? Like, are there any new platforms or any new strategies that you're looking to try in the next year?
So the next year is actually about editing. editing down my presence a little bit. I don't want to lose anything. Like, I stopped posting on YouTube, for example. So that's coming back. That is something new that's being added. But that, I think I'm trying, maybe not editing, limiting is the right word. I'm trying to limit my presence, because I do have ADHD and I love all the new platforms. Social media is just like really fun for me. and it's like a game I get to play, and it's people I get to connect to. So I'm really tempted to be on everything all the time. And so I think upcoming, I'm really trying to scale my business. And that means I have to decide where my time goes. And at the end of the day, content creation is unbelievably helpful. It gets you tons of leads. It gets people to trust you and love you and, you know, whatever. But I also have to make time for my clients. I also have to make time for, you know, growing the business the way I want to grow it. And so the next year or so is about not letting myself branch out too much and trying to just stick to what is working, stick to what I'm doing. We'll see.
I love that, editing down, because it is so easy to like expand. But you know what's working. It's working for you. So keep doing that. And then for those people who are listening who are like, I need more of this in my life, I know you've got the executive dysfunction training. It's actually three trainings. Tell us about it.
Ah, yay. Okay. So it's three trainings. It's all about housework, hobbies, and hygiene. So those are three areas that a lot of neurodivergent people really struggle to keep up with things. I know I do. And so it's three different trainings. Each one, one's on cleaning, one's on self-care and hygiene, and one is on like actually participating in your hobbies. And each training will walk you through sort of what executive dysfunction is, which, by the way, if you don't know and you're listening, it's a lot of different things. But the definition that a lot of us use is like difficulty starting a task. It's sort of like that task paralysis, that feeling of like, I know what it's, we think we're lazy, but really like, it's just executive dysfunction getting in the way. It's just like a brick wall in between you and the task. So, these trainings walk you through some different strategies basically for how to tackle housework, how to actually take care of your hygiene, and how to reduce the shame around those things, because cleanliness is not a moral value, cleanliness of your home or yourself. Okay. It's has nothing to do with morality. You are a fine person. Even if you smell terrible, it's fine. Like it really is okay. So, yeah, reducing shame is actually a practical strategy in some ways. Fun fact, because hating yourself requires energy, and the less you hate yourself, the more energy you have to actually get stuff done. So fun fact. We'll talk about all of that in the trainings. So yeah, you can go check those out.
Yes, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. That will be onlinedrea.com/305, and all the links to check out the things that Megan's doing on TikTok, on Instagram, YouTube, podcast, all of that will be in the show notes, onlinedrea.com/305. Megan, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff.
Yay. Yeah, it's super fun. And also thank you, dear listener, for tuning in to another episode. Make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and Spotify helps us stay in the top 100 marketing podcasts. I'll be back soon with a new episode. Bye for now.